EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. How are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. Our first guest we're going to be meeting today is Brian from North Carolina. And Brian will be sharing with us his UFO sightings. One was when he witnessed with his wife a very large black triangle-shaped craft pass silently over his property, an event that changed their lives forever. Then we say aloha to Andrea in Hawaii and her paranormal experiences with ghosts of people she knew in life, precognition dreams and a UFO sighting over Chinatown, and Andrea's spiritual path. Now, just quickly, I have got my hands on 2 free tickets for the Virtual X Conference on Zoom, brought to you by the UnX Network. The event will be on May 13th to the 14th, 2022, and speakers include Micah Hanks, Margie Kay, Lee Spregor, Ray Hernandez, Jimmy Church, Whitley Strieber, Dan Terry, and many more. So to enter for a chance to win, email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com with XCon in the subject line, then email me your name. Closing date for this is Saturday, May the 8th, and I will pick 2 names out of a hat and announce on Sunday's show. And you can find a link to the event down below in the show notes. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Brian, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Nick. Thank you for having me on the show today. I really enjoy your podcast.
That's great. Thank you for joining us today, this fine afternoon, calling from North Carolina.
Yes, I currently live in the great state of North Carolina, and I just thought I'd share some things I've had experienced here and there and other places as well.
Wonderful. Now, Brian, you're going to be sharing UFO encounters that occurred in 2011. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, and let the listeners know what you experienced?
Yes, I would love to. This would be in the month of March 2010, I believe, 11 perhaps, approximately. It was approximately 10 o'clock at night. Stepped outside of my home to have I'm a smoker, so I stepped outside to get some fresh air and have a smoke. And I step around the corner at the back of the house, and immediately a large white light caught my attention setting above one of the billboards on the side of the highway behind my home. I'd lived in this home for several years, so I'm quite familiar with the interstate and the billboards, and it caught my attention immediately. Well, no sooner that this huge bright light caught my attention, it started to move. It was literally just hovering over the billboard, over the interstate. Well, as it started to slowly glide, and the billboard from my home is approximately 100 feet at the most. So the light starts to move, and it's big. It's a huge light. It's the size probably of a small car. I mean, it was just not bright. It was just white. Hard to explain. It didn't give off a blinding light. It was just a soft glow. Well, like I said, when I saw it, and I was just like, wait, what is that? It started to move. Well, by the time it moved, it had already covered my entire home. It moved maybe 50 feet, and by then, what I saw was mind-blowing. It was a black triangle craft, not 100 feet off the ground from my home, and it had soft white lights on the corners, non-blinking, just real soft. Well, this triangle craft was silent, and it glided motionlessly, just so slightly, just a slight movement. And I'm telling you that I would take a lie detector test. It doesn't mean that what I saw was a UFO. It just would mean that I know what I saw. It was the size of a football field, at least. And it was 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. So there were stars out. And what caught my attention is it blackened out the whole sky underneath me. So I had to fixate my eyes to adjust to see the shape of this. And it was clearly a size of a triangle, and it covered my home and my neighbor's home in size. Well, I called to my wife, "You got to come out here and see this. Honey, this is amazing." And she came out and she saw it as well, which was nice to have somebody else there, because that's too close for comfort for me. I've always had an interest in UFOs, and I've had some sightings in the past, but this was just a little too close. And for it to be so silent, and to move so slowly, was what baffled me. Anything that big that could suspend itself in the air, what got me. But we watched it. We both had phones in our pockets. And we were so blown away, either one of us could even think to grab any of our cell phones and take any kind of a picture or video. We watched it slowly. We live in front of a mountain in front of our home. We watched it bank up its nose and just glide so effortlessly over the mountain, and just watched it slowly disappear into the distance. And that was the most profound one of the most profound UFO sightings I'd ever seen. That was mind blowing, and the sheer size of it was just incredible. Well, that was in 2010, March 10. I hope I'm correct in the dates. It could be 11, but I think it was 2010. Well, that's the most profound one. Well, I've got a couple more that has happened in North Carolina since then. 2012, my wife's sitting on the front porch looking at the sky. I'm inside painting the living room. She calls me. It's the middle of the daytime. She calls me outside. She says, "Brian, check this out." And this is after we've seen that UFO. And she never was a big believer in them. You know, she just always didn't really talk much about them or anything. So I never bothered. So when I called her out for that first one, she was really on the scene. She calls me outside in front of my home. In the sky is a fighter jet literally trying to chase this object. This object was just playing with the jet. It was fast as speed of sound, probably. It would shoot into a cloud, and the jet would try to follow it. Then it would shoot back out of the cloud. And you could see the jet try to bank. And you don't know how slow jets are or how primitive they look until they're trying to chase a UFO. They just have no maneuverability. Our jets don't. And so we watched this for 5 minutes in front of my home in the middle of the daytime. The fighter jet trying desperately to catch this. I couldn't tell what it was from a distance. It looked like a disc, but you could see it clear enough to know that the jet was chasing it and could stood no chance for catching it. And we watched it shoot into a cloud, And as the fighter pilot passed the cloud, the UFO or the craft shot straight up out of the cloud, left a huge smoke ring, and it was gone. And that just left us speechless. You know, just to see it in front of your home in the middle of the day, it's just, it's unbelievable. Well, I'd like to go back in time a little bit. I could have started off with one of the ones earlier in the years, but 2003, Winter Haven, Florida, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, Christmas Day. We're all inside celebrating Christmas, having drinks, and kids are outside, not alcoholic drinks, food and drinks. The children are playing outside. One of them come in and say, "Brian, why don't you come out here and look at this?" And I'm, instead of saying, no, leave us adults alone, whatever, I go out to look to see what the kid's talking about. He was a friend of a friend. He was a child of a friend of mine. And I go outside, and there is a disc hovering over the neighbor's house where I'm at, just sitting there. Unbelievable. Can't believe I'm seeing this. Just sitting over this house, just hovering silently. And it looked like it was burnt metal with a greenish hue underneath the bottom of it. It just kind of like gases, just kind of vibe, you know, like a hot summer day when you see fumes coming off the road, that's what the bottom was doing. But it was greenish. And I was just completely blown away. That was a middle of the day UFO sighting. A UFO the size of a small home setting on top, hovering on top of a house. Well, it slowly starts to glide off. I'm looking at it. I mean, it's just incredible how close these things are. You know, they can be to me. It blows me away. I'm talking 100 feet above my head, less than that above the house that it was setting over on top. Well, I watch it go over my head, so I'm able to look up and look right underneath this disc, the size of a small house, and I can see it. I'm looking at it, and it's got, the metal looks like it's all, it kind of like has been burnt, maybe not burnt, but had like black soot on it, around it, with those fumes coming up from underneath it, sort of, so to speak. Well, I watch it slowly glide off over our home, over the next people's home across the street. Then it goes up and it starts heading towards the sky. Well, I'm looking, and then I'm watching it. And all of a sudden, this other craft comes out to the left side of the sky in front of the house I'm at, comes out of nowhere, manifests itself, and it's huge, right? I mean, I'm just like, okay, I'm getting two for one here. What is going on, right? And I'm watching this craft that I've seen, this is 2003, slowly glide to, this thing is silent too. I don't know what it's called, glide. I watch it travel to this craft. Then I realize that this craft is the size of an aircraft carrier. This disc goes inside of this other craft. It goes inside of it. I watch it, and it comes back out. It comes back out and starts doing these other maneuvers around in a circle, zigzagging back and forth, the same craft that I did see. Then it shoots back up to this other huge craft and goes inside of it. Then the other craft just gone. It just starts off. And that right there just blew me away. I have no other words for it. Just to be that close. And that would be my second two closest sightings that are really profound. Just super close. Like you could throw a rock at them almost. But the black triangle is what's really the thing that really was the cake topper for me. It was left me mind blown. You know, you always want to see something up close. You fantasize about these things. But when it's that close to you in your home, it's kind of uncomfortable. But it still was a great thing to see because I've always had an interest in UFOs. And I'm sorry if I'm all over the place here with my stories. My interest started in 1978. I'm 53 years old. When I was 9 years old, traveling home with my father in West Virginia, in the mountains of West Virginia. We lived 100 miles out in the middle of nowhere. There was hardly any homes. We had to drive 30 miles to the nearest town, sort of thing. We lived on a farm. We're driving home, 1978. My dad sees some people up ahead in the headlights on the side of the road that appear to be broke down, and he was always about helping folks. Well, when we both, I'm sitting, it's just him and I, and I'm sitting in the passenger seat. We pull up to the people, and I clearly see it like he does. they're all standing on the side of the road looking up in the air with their mouths open, just like they're dumbstruck about something. Where me and my dad both were like, what are they doing? Well, we get out and my dad goes, hey, y'all all right? And then nobody answers. They're just standing there staring up into the sky. Then me and my dad both turned around to look to see what it is they were looking at. It, and I'd be darned if it wasn't a UFO the size, I don't know, the size of a, it's hard to compare, size of a couple school buses at least, just hovering above a mountain with non-flashing lights in a circle. They were just around the craft. And we watched it. Me, my father, and whoever the strangers were, we watched it search the mountainside with a light, like a searchlight. It was searching for something, and it was silent. And by the time that we watched it for a few minutes to search, it just glided around. Just, it would slide sideways. It would slide up and down, back and forth, searching. Then it just kind of glided in between two valleys and did like a turn, like a bank, and just kind of went around another ridge, and we lost sight of it. Well, there was nothing to share. There was no conversation. Nobody said anything. I'll never forget it, how profound it was. That we all, my dad and I, just we just walked away from those folks and got in our truck and we drove off. Well, that was the beginning of my interest in sightings. And that one was pretty profound. In 1978, that was why it was pretty crazy to see. And my newest and latest sighting was last year. I see, probably about January. Me and my wife and I was on the back porch. And it was the winter months. The leaves were all gone off the house. Clear view of the sky. No problem seeing anything, really. A light shoots from the far north straight over to the top of my house and just shoots diagonally straight over to the back side of the mountain. Gone. So what I'm saying is it looked like it did 50 miles, just shot from 50 miles within a second to the top of my house near my barn, sat there for just a second, and did an immediate right turn and left the streak and was gone. And that was the most recent one. And that one was pretty profound, too, because just the way that you could, the light was 50 miles in the distance, and then all of a sudden just appear right there in my house, right there in my yard. I'm like, wow. You know, then for it to shoot off across the, you know, and it just makes your mind wonder, you know, like, really what's going on? You know, like, how do these things maneuver like they do? Or how are they so silent? I mean, like the triangle, how can something that big, that large, be that silent and even suspend itself in the air without any noise? It's just mind boggling. But I thought I'd like to share those with you. Maybe if anyone else has seen anything similar, that maybe they'll feel better to know that somebody else has seen them too. And that's about all I have for that. Thought I'd share my stories with you and hope that it's wasn't too long and drug out.
So many interesting sightings there, Brian.
I tried not to get too excited. I'm reliving them while I'm talking about them.
People are telling their accounts, you know, they are reliving it. That's what, you know, that's what people are doing. The Black Triangle sighting you had, I mean, that was a good size craft.
Man, it was every bit of the size of a football field. And like I said, the homes were close together and it covered both our homes. And being the buff that I am, the UFO buff, that scared me. I don't scare very easily. I live in the mountains. I'm a country man, you know, I'm not easily scared. That scared me.
I mean, a football field, I mean, that's what, 100, is it 100 yards?
100 yards, that's correct, at least. I would say it was a football field. Yeah, it was a football field length both ways, like from the back to the tip, to both the tips, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
So you're probably looking at about 300 feet. God, that's a good size.
Yes. And to have a witness, just to have my wife there to see it, that's what was the most, saved my sanity.
It is always good.
Just to have someone.
Just to have someone, yeah. You have these sightings and you run indoors and you say, you know, I've just seen this, and like, but it's always it's always good if they're there as well.
Yes. Yeah, and that was amazing, just absolutely amazing. And I don't know why it was there, you know, but I guess we'll never know.
And it had three soft white lights on either edge.
Yes, non-blinking, just soft white lights. And the one in the front was soft too. It was big and white, but it was soft. It wasn't blinding.
Could you make out any detail of the base of the craft?
It was just black, just dark. I mean, you could see lines, like the Millennium Falcon, maybe how that spaceship has those little different spots and bumps and circles and different little squares and different shapes. It's hard to explain. It just has a different structure to it altogether underneath. I mean, I could have opened a newspaper in front of my face and still it covered the whole neighborhood practically, my side of the street.
It makes you wonder as well how something so big can move so silently.
Yes. Yes, and how it can keep itself levitated. How can something that big keep itself levitated? You know, a billboard's no more than 100 feet off the ground, and it was just above it. So we're talking 150 feet off the ground, and it's levitating with no noise. That's the part that just completely, you know, fried my brain. You know, I can see things from a distance and kind of come up with some sort of, you know, something. But this was just, there was nothing. There was nothing I could say to myself to make it seem possible. There's just nothing. But I guess I'm kind of glad I saw it.
And it's a memory which is probably etched in your brain forever now.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's one of those things I'd like to forget it, sort of, like let it go. Seeing something from the distance, it's kind of like, oh, well, it could have been anything. Oh, no, this was pretty profound sighting. I'll always remember. And you know what, to be honest, I don't ever want to see one like that ever again, honestly. The thing is, too, I went inside my home. And I have a 120-pound bull mastiff dog who's never scared of anything, right? We go inside after the sighting. My dog is up under our bed, scurrying, hiding. It doesn't sound like much for a pet to be scared or hiding, but she wasn't outside. She didn't know what her and my wife and I were seeing. So to go back inside and see my 120-pound fearless dog cowering underneath my bed right after that, my dog sensed something.
Yeah, and they don't scare easily. So I wonder if you couldn't hear anything, but maybe you could feel something, you know, like an energy or something as it passed over.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, Nick, exactly, because she's not, you know, since that sighting that night, she's never had that problem ever again. That was never part of her life, being scared, and it has not been since then. But I'm not going to go by the behaviors of my pet, but to see her up under the bed scared, that confirmed something for me, you know, that it was putting off some sort of frequency, perhaps, you know, that I didn't hear.
Sure, yeah. Animals are very sensitive.
My dog's never met a stranger. I mean, she's just not scared. Never met a stranger. She's always, you know, on point and good. She's still alive and she's still with us. Too bad you can't talk to our pets and ask her what it was.
That is one thing, and be able to communicate and find out, you know, what they felt or what they saw.
Yes. And the one in 2003, that was pretty profound too, watching a craft go inside of a mothership. That was cool.
This is an interesting one. Did you see actually how it actually did enter the other craft?
Yes, I did. Good full view. It opened up a hatch. I could see it because the mothership was a little farther in the distance and it was huge. But I saw the black opening. I saw the black appear in the side. You know what I mean? It could have been some sort of, I don't know, interdimensional, you know, void. But it looked like to me like something opened. And for this to go, you know, it went into it easily. It was that big. The other craft just sitting there. And then I watched that come out, back out, and start circling around again, looking for something. But what gets me is when I've seen these things that are so big, they're always just sitting above something right when I come outside. You know, it gives me the creeps. And it's the second time now that I've had to go outside to see something that big, that silent, just sitting there until I'm out and about. Then it decides to start slowly drifting away. I don't want to sound like a paranoia. I'm not going to add any more to that. I'm just thinking, why are these things just sitting until I come outside? You know, why am I seeing them sit and then glide off this big and silently? But that's a different story altogether.
And it was just hovering just above your neighbor's house.
Literally, just above the chimney. To be the size of a, you know, like I said, two or three cars, huge, just sitting there. Until I, like I said, the kid came out. He's like, come here and check this out, Brian. Okay, I'm coming, you know. So I'm glad I didn't say, no, I'm good, man. Yeah, it was just sitting there above the home. And the craft itself looked like it entered the atmosphere several different times, if that makes sense. The way it had the burnt soot on the metal, like like burnt soot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it had like a green hue.
A green hue underneath it. Yeah, like when you burn propane, like I would see it kind of the fumes vaporizing a little bit. No noise. That one's pretty hard to forget too.
And did you ever tell your neighbor that what you witnessed over their house?
No, I never did. No, that was actually, I was in Florida visiting some friends at their house. I didn't know their neighbors. I was at a house when the kid came out and said, check this out. It was hovering over the house next to it. Nobody else. None of the rest of the adults went outside to see what the kid wanted. Nobody usually does when kids say there's something cool to see. You know, that's grown ups just like, yeah, buddy, whatever. And I ran out there. No, I didn't know the people whose home it was hovering over. Maybe I should have knocked on her door and asked. I
wonder what kind of response you would have got.
I probably Nick, you know how this is. If I go there saying I saw a UFO over your house, they'd be like, all right, buddy, sure. Stay out of the eggnog.
But they could have just said, not again.
I know. Well, since I didn't know who they were. But I went in and told everybody in the house what I saw, and they didn't seem to care. They're just, yeah, okay, Brian, sure, buddy. You know, like I was some kid. Like, I'm telling you all, there's a mothership sitting in that. Okay, yeah, we trust you. You know, you just get discredited.
I wonder how often that happens.
Yeah, what, being discredited?
As a kid, yeah.
Oh, all the time. That's why I've never told anybody about my UFO sightings ever anyway, you know? So when I discovered your podcast, I thought, well, that's probably somebody you can tell and they won't laugh at you.
No laughing here. So your very first experience went back to 1978.
That's correct. Yeah, 1978, when I was 9, 10 years old, saw a UFO searching the countryside, looking for something.
Witnessed by a big group.
Yes, yes. The ones that we pulled up, we were driving home and you could see them in the headlights. They just standing there like zombies with their mouths open. That was scary enough. But like, you know, my dad said, we'll see what they want. He's brave. They wouldn't even ask. They wouldn't even talk to him when we pulled up. He's like, hey, you guys all right? They just didn't even acknowledge us. When I saw what I saw and my dad seen it, that was it for me. And that one was huge too. You know, some people are with kids and their UFO stories, they're getting discredited too.
Yeah, they were probably all dumbfounded by what, you know, what they were all seeing.
Yes, I'll never forget that. It's funny, 1978 is a long time ago, but I remember that night like it was last night. Just seeing these people, these four people on the side of the road, standing with their hands by their sides, with their mouths open. That was scary enough. And they never did get their composure back. We've gotten the truck and left before they ever even snapped out of whatever, you know, they were in, you know, their shock, disbelief.
Hopefully they reported it or, you know, told someone. They didn't just take it to the grave or anything.
Yes, and that, yeah, you don't know if these people are still around, if they even remember. So now I kind of like quit looking in the sky so much, Nick. That black triangle kind of turned me off from going outside like I used to at night and look at the stars and look for UFOs and have my binoculars, because I don't want to see that again. I just don't have an interest in that. That's too close.
Too close to comfort.
Yeah. So I've kind of laid back on the hill. I mean, I was a real, really always want to see something. Got to be careful what you wish for, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, that can be true sometimes. And it's important to get these accounts out, you know, Brian.
I think so. For the sanity of other people and like-minded folks like myself, you know. Don't want people to be scared or too alarmed. But there's other people out there, too, that have had some close experiences. I don't particularly want to get abducted. You know, I kind of like home here on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you got work on Monday. I mean,
especially if you got work on Monday.
There is that.
Yeah, I'd get abducted on a Friday. It'd be my luck.
Or you've got, you know, the wife has sent you out down to the store.
Yeah, for a gallon of milk and never come back. Yeah, that'd be my luck, Nick.
She won't be happy. I know mine wouldn't.
And she ain't going to believe the whole UFO abduction story, trust me.
Wonderful. Brian, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you for having me, Nick. Again, thank you for your time and have a great day.
You're more than welcome. Take care, Brian, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. this coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Andrea, and welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on today, and you're calling from Honolulu in Hawaii.
Yes, that's correct. Aloha.
Aloha. Wonderful. Now, you're going to be sharing some of your paranormal experiences with us today. Would you like to start the very beginning for us, please?
Yeah, certainly. I'm really nervous. I haven't been on a podcast before, but let's just see how this goes. So I've had a lot of spiritual experiences, and some people might just refer to them as paranormal. So I guess I'll start with this. Over the years, I've seen and I have felt spirits of many of my family members who have passed away. And I think this is a good place for me to start, because I think a lot of people have seen ghosts. They've had some kind of interaction, seeing, feeling, hearing, being touched. So I've seen my father's spirit and my brother's spirit. They died within a year of each other. And they would come to me in a shadow form. It would be like just a shadow, your shadow, if you're out in the sun. That's what it would look like to me. But what really gave it away for me was I recognized their energy. I recognized my father's energy. I recognize my brother's energy. You know, we all are energetic beings and we all have an energy signature. And so tied into that energy signature is your personality characteristics, for example. And so when I would see my father and see his shadow, I knew it was him because I could feel his personality. And the same with my brother. I lost that ability at some point, being able to see spirits, but I can still feel and I can still hear spirits who have passed on. And these are people that I've known in life. So I've heard my mother, I've heard my Nana, I've heard my stepfather. One evening, my husband and I had been watching a movie and we put it on pause to take a bathroom break, and I was coming out of the bathroom, and out of nowhere, I heard my stepfather call my name. And it just stopped me in my tracks, because my stepfather was a good guy, but honestly, we weren't very close. I live in Hawaii and they live in Tennessee. So I was really surprised to hear him say my name 2 weeks after he passed. And I walked out into the living room and I looked at my husband, and he had this look of surprise on his face. And I said, "Did you hear that?" And he said, "Yeah, I heard that. I heard a man say your name. It was clear as day." And so that was a really fascinating experience, to be able to share that with someone else and to be able to get a witness to say, "Yeah, I heard that." Now, I should let you know that my husband is a physicist. He's an atmospheric scientist. So he's very science-based, but he is also spiritual. But he can't come up with any other explanation other than it was spirit and it was communicating with us. So that's something that I always like to share with people before I introduce them to the next. It wasn't the very next, but one of my peak events. So through the years, I've had many paranormal experiences, and I started studying spirituality in 2014. So I was already on board with ghosts being a reality because I had experienced so much of it. But, you know, concepts like spirit guides and archangels and spiritual spouses was just way beyond my belief and understanding. And I'm one of those people that if I'm going to believe something, I need to see evidence. That's just how I've always been, and maybe that's because of my legal career. But, you know, being spiritual, what that means to me is having a feeling, a sense, a belief that there is something more to our reality, that there is something more to than what we can see with our eyes, and that a universal energy runs through us all and connects us all to everything. And I really believe that when we die, the essence of us continues on in the form of spirit. So I was on the spiritual path, and there were things that I already believed in, but there were things I was a little unsure of. In 2018, I bought some spiritual books, and both of these books mentioned something about spirit guides. And so I started getting interested in spirit guides. I had heard about it before, but now I was studying it. And I decided I was going to use some of these techniques in my meditation practice to see if I could get some sort of reaction from spirit. So soon after incorporating these techniques into my meditation, I started feeling an unfamiliar presence. I was getting messages, verbal messages. I was hearing things and I was seeing things. And I don't really know how to explain this part, but I was getting these sensations of knowing. So that one's always a hard one for me to explain, but nonetheless, that's what was happening. And, you know, this was really different from all of those experiences where I could feel, see, hear spirits of my family who had passed away. So I come from this 25-year legal career. And, you know, working in the law, you got to work with evidence. If you don't have evidence to prove your claim, you're going to lose, right? So I was coming from that mindset. I need to have evidence to prove that I'm not losing my mind, that I'm not reading these spiritual books and being influenced to the point to where I'm manufacturing these experiences in my mind. So it was February the 12th, 2018, and it was about 3:30 in the morning. And I had been having a hard time sleeping since I was getting those messages from spirit. Since that started, I had been having a hard time sleeping because I was going back and forth thinking, you know, this just can't be real. I'm manufacturing this. I'm reading these books and I'm creating these experiences. So one night I was having trouble sleeping and I went into a meditative state. And in my mind, I said, okay, spirit, if you are real, and if you're really there, and if you are really communicating with me, you need to give me evidence. I need some concrete evidence, and I want you to set off my fire alarm. And bam, within 3 seconds, my fire alarm went off. My husband, who was right next to me, he had been sleeping this whole time. Later, I found out he had been shaken out of a nice dream. And he jumps out of bed and he goes to unplug the fire alarm from the ceiling. He turns around, the light's on at this time, and he sees me sitting up in bed with this huge smile on my face. And he looked at me like, what is this all about? And why are you so calm? And I said, I just got this miraculous proof that spirit is real. I asked my spirit guide, and he knew I was struggling with this. I asked my spirit guide to set off my fire alarm to prove its existence. And it did. It was an astonishing event. It was amazing. It was like I had been introduced suddenly to a new reality. It was absolutely breathtaking. So after that, I was inspired again to get into my spiritual studies. I had the faith again that spirit exists. And a few months go by and all is well, but I suffered from depression for almost all of my life, and that was tied into severe complex PTSD from childhood. And I would go through these periods of depression, and that was something I was used to. But when I got into my spiritual studies and I was really connecting with spirit, when I would get into a depressive state, I would start to lose my connection with spirit. And so with everything that I've read and studied, my understanding is in order to communicate with spirit, you need to raise your vibrations while spirit lowers theirs. And the smaller that gap is, the clearer the communication. And so I had started to go down in depression a few months after that fire alarm event. And I found myself yet again questioning whether or not spirit was real and whether or not I was really experiencing it. And so I was sitting on my bed. It was in the middle of the day. And my son was at home. He was in his bedroom and he was on his iPad. And I was in meditation and I said something like, you know, spirit, I've lost my connection with you again. This is really difficult on me to go from these really high, amazing highs of clear communication to nothing. And I said, you need to set off my son's fire alarm. Within seconds, again, this was within, it seemed like 3 seconds, my son's fire alarm went off. My son comes running out of the room. He's heard about the first fire alarm incident. He's a complete skeptic, which is fine. But he comes running into the room, and the first thing he said was, Mom, why are you setting off the fire alarm again? And of course, it's not me. I told him it was spirit, that I needed to have confirmation again from spirit that we are really connecting and that they really exist. So again, my spiritual studies, I got back into my spiritual studies. I was inspired once again. Everything was all good and well for a few months. And I started to go down again in depression. And I started to disconnect once again with spirit. And so this time it was really hard on me because I had had these two profound spiritual energetic events that proved to me that spirit is real. But I was in such a depressive state at this point that I was doubting it once again. And so I went and I picked up all of my spiritual books, as many as I could carry, and I was just going to go outside and throw them in the trash. I was done. It was too difficult. I was tired of these ups and downs. And I was walking through the kitchen and my husband stopped me and he was laughing. And I had just told him I'm abandoning my spiritual path, but he wasn't listening, apparently. And he pointed to the bowl on the counter and he was laughing at himself that he had put raw oats and water in a bowl. And he had been making oatmeal for, you know, decades, and he had never done that before. And I halfway paid attention to that. My attention was drawn suddenly to the pot on the stove. And I walked over and I looked in the pot, and he had put water in there and it had been boiling, and he had, I guess, just added oats. There was a perfectly shaped heart, in that oatmeal water, and it was starting to slowly spin upright. When I first saw it, it was upside down. I watched as it slowly started to spin upright clockwise, and I waited until it was completely upright and it stopped facing me. I really took notice of that, but I was still on my way out to the garbage. Before I got to the garage, I stopped myself and I said, this is a sign from Spirit. I didn't ask for a sign, but Spirit has given me a sign. Hey, we understand you get depressed. We get that. And we know that your vibrations drop way, way low, too low for you to communicate with us. But that doesn't mean that we're not around. And I took that heart as a sign that they're around and they know what's going on and that they can send me messages even during times that I can't hear them and get all of these different types of communications from them, because I would see, feel, hear. And so I thought that was quite fascinating. And, you know, after that third experience, I really call those three experiences my peak events. And James Van Praagh, he's a psychic medium, a well-known psychic medium. And in his book, Adventures of the Soul, he calls experiences like these experiences peak events. And I can tell you they were absolutely peak events in my spiritual journey, but I have so many other wild and crazy things that have happened to me that are energetic. Just the other night, I came in from a hike. It was, we had been doing a nighttime beach meditation to connect to the cosmos, which is a lot of fun. And I had come inside to get some ice water, and just out of nowhere, I felt this energetic rush go through my head, and it was like a swirl feeling. And at that same moment, all of the electricity in the house went off. The house went completely dark. I got a feel, I feel like there was a connection to that. I feel like whatever I was feeling in my head, that energetic sensation, was related to the lights going off, because it happened simultaneously. So yeah, those are some of my wild spiritual energetic experiences. I know, Nick, that you were asking for people to share experiences about out-of-body experiences, and I do have one of those I'd like to share. When I was 7 years old, my brother, my older brother and my older sister, my brother was 4 years older, my sister was 8 years older, they were fighting. My brother was trying to get into my sister's room, and I was standing behind my brother. I was wearing my little cheerleading outfit, and I was cheering for him to bust down her door to get into her room. And at some point, she slammed the door back on my brother, and it sent him flying backwards, and he landed on me. And he was this big boy, and I was this little stick figure of a girl. And when he landed on me, we all heard breaks, and they immediately picked me up and they put me in bed. And my mom had just gone an hour or so before to work at the hospital. She was working graveyard shift as an emergency room nurse, and my dad was home. But we were all very scared to tell my dad what had happened. We didn't want to tell my dad that my brother had fallen on me and hurt me, because my older two siblings were his stepchildren, and they were kind of treated like stepchildren, and we were afraid of him. So they had me in bed. They tried to make me as comfortable as possible. I do remember parts of this. I would go in and out of consciousness, and I was in a sheer amount of pain, more pain than childbirth or any other injury I've experienced since then. I was going into these blackouts. At one point, I looked down, and I was above my body. And I was looking down at my bed, at my little body with my little mangled leg, and it was grotesquely swollen. It was black and blue and green. It just looked awful. And I had my older sister on one side of the bed and my brother on the other side of the bed, and they were desperately trying to keep me quiet because they didn't want to get into any trouble. But that experience proved to me that when people suffer catastrophic injuries like that, and they're in an immense amount of pain, that their soul can leave the body to remove itself from that experience. And I really believe that's what was happening there. I was a 7-year-old child, and I don't know how I was able to go through that without any help, but I believe I had some sort of angelic intervention, and that I was brought out of my body to give myself a break from the agony that I was in. I also believe that that event opened a door to spirituality for me and allows me to have a stronger connection to the spirit world. I've also been told several times that that is a sign of a shaman. And I don't know if I believe that because I don't want to get my ego involved in this at all. There's a belief that shamans go through traumatic experiences and that it opens up a realm into another reality that we're just not familiar with otherwise. Another interesting note is my maiden name is Staggs, S-T-A-G-G-S, like a male deer with the antlers, and that has been associated with shamans. Another interesting thing was that when I was born with a veil, and that is also a sign that many believe points to an individual becoming a shaman. So if you're born with part of the amniotic sac covering your head and face, like I was, some people believe that your destiny is to help people, heal, to help people evolve into better human beings. And I gotta tell you that I've been on that path all my life. I've always had this immense pull towards helping people. And when I was 7 years old, that was the first real time I can remember that I was able to protect other people. And throughout my life, I've busted up fights between strangers with weapons. There's a lot of different experiences that I've had where if I see someone in danger, part of me gets involved and just overtakes the rational thinking mind and just goes into action and wants to protect. And that's really who I am today. I want to carry that on, but I want to do it in a more safe and positive environment. And that's why I'm doing crystal Reiki. And I've left my legal career. So that's where all of my experiences have brought me today, to help people cut ties with negative vibrations, with traumas. I was able to do it. I've seen people get shot. I've seen people shoot themselves. I've seen all kinds of violence. I had a classmate who was killed by the fast food serial killer in Nashville. I've got so many experiences with evil and with good, and it really makes me believe that doing energy work is really what I'm supposed to do.
I love hearing the birds in the background. You can definitely tell it's Hawaii.
Right. You hear that?
I like that. You know, I've always believed that, you know, the life that we have now, we've already decided it. You know, we've already decided on our life, you know, before we enter into these bodies.
Yes, I believe that too, definitely. I really do. And, you know, when people have traumatic experiences occur to them, a lot of times people will take that as, oh, woe is me, I'm a victim, I wish this had not happened to me, and I wish it hadn't have happened to you either. But what you need to recognize is when you experience things, good and bad, you are experiencing new things. You're becoming a wiser individual. And with more experience, the more wisdom you have to share with others to help them overcome, you know, drags on their vibrations. And so it's really an opportunity to turn the situation around and say, look, all of this stuff happened to me, but I have survived it. I've overcome it, and I'm putting it to good use, and I'm going to help other people cut their ties with negative vibrations and trauma. And it makes it all worth the while if you feel like you can help other people. And it's the most fulfilling thing for me. You know, it's nice to make money, but that is not a priority for me. My priority is feeling like I'm doing something good in the world when we so desperately need it.
And it's good that you've had a career change. You've got yourself out of that, and you know, you're doing something a lot better. Even though, you know, there is a lot of attorneys out there that unethical practices need sorting out. But still, you know, you've done, it's your path, isn't it?
It is my path. Yeah, it definitely is my path. And you know, the interesting thing that I experienced when I investigated attorneys, and I just thought I should share this, the vast majority of attorneys are trying to do the right thing. They are trying to be ethical. But if you're an attorney and you're running a solo practice on your own, you're running a business and a law practice, and that's a lot to handle. And so sometimes deadlines get missed, and sometimes you forget to file a motion or turn over discovery. Usually it's not catastrophic to a case. So the vast majority of attorneys out there, I think they get a bad rap. I really do. I've worked with a lot of them. There are some, you know, really bad actors out there, and they need to be disbarred. But yeah, that's just another one of my experiences. You know, the popular belief that attorneys are all crooks is just not true. You know, I've been in this field for 25 years, and there's a lot of great attorneys out there doing a lot of great work. And yeah, that's just another one of my experiences that I like to share with people.
You've had some precognition dreams as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I have. This one happened September 7th, 2001. So this would have been a few days before 9/11. I think it was a dream, but I honestly don't know for sure. I was driving down Baratania Street going into downtown Honolulu, and I was passing this it was a Japanese memorial museum. I can't remember the name of it, but it's on Baratania Street next to Anna Bananas. And I had this vision all of a sudden of blood coming out of slats in the building. And so the vision involved this building that I was looking at. Now the slats, they ran horizontal, so left to right. The slats on the World Trade Centers was vertical, you know, up and down. So there was that big difference. And there was only one building as opposed to two twin towers. But in that vision, it was 4 days before 9/11 happened. I saw blood pouring out of this building. There was no airplanes. There was nothing like that. But it was really unsettling. I did not know what to make of it. I thought maybe it was just a bad dream. But then 9/11 happened, and I could just really feel it. I could really feel that connection. And it was sad because I think other people have had that experience right before 9/11. They felt something, but you don't know where it's going to happen, if it's really going to happen, and who's doing it. It's a frustrating experience to have.
I've heard countless people had the same dreams related to 9/11. Of course, it was It was a very traumatic time. You know, the world changed basically after that event.
It did. And unfortunately, it seems like it's gone downhill since. But I do feel like we can turn things around. I think that we need to have more people that are open-minded. We need to have more people to drop their prejudices and just embrace each other. And just, we need to move beyond, you know, all these things that hold us back.
I agree. Yeah, we're in a big transitional period at the minute. And I think it'd be like this for a few years. But yeah, it will get better. It will get better.
I think so too. You know, it has to at this point.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
You've also had a UFO experience in Honolulu?
That's right. That was, I think that was in January, February, or March 2007. I had sold a house out in South Oahu and moved into Chinatown. And I was renting because I just wanted to experience that neighborhood. And I was out on my lanai. It was on the 20th floor. And I was on the phone with my Nana. And all of a sudden, I see this shooting star, and as the words come out of my mouth, oh, Nana, I'm seeing a shooting star, it completely stopped. It stopped for a few seconds, and then it went left along the horizon, and it moved just as quickly as it did when I thought it was a shooting star. It was quite fascinating, and it was on the news. There were people that had seen it from the beach from that perspective, and so it looked a little different. They thought that we were seeing a missile come in from who knows where, coming into Honolulu, and that, you know, we always have that underlying fear that that's going to happen here. But that was seen probably by thousands of people, maybe more. It was all over the news. And so that was my UFO experience, and it definitely was unidentified. I've never seen anything move like that, move at the speed of a shooting star, and to stop and then move in the opposite direction along the horizon. It was really mind-blowing.
Shooting stars, they just don't do that.
They don't do that, no.
And you're actually my first guest from Hawaii.
Oh, okay, interesting. I'm surprised to hear that, though.
Yeah, always on the lookout for more. I did have Neb, who was actually sailing from Mexico to Hawaii, and he had a whole heap of experiences between there and when he was docked, when he left Hawaii. Uh-huh. But actually, you're the first on the Hawaiian Islands.
Right, right. Well, I've been here since 94, and it's the place to be for sure if you want to, you know, come and unwind.
It looks beautiful. I've always wanted to go check out the surf.
Yeah, it's definitely a great place. And if you like to hike, it's a great place for hiking. Lots of mountains. And a lot of people don't realize that. We have a lot of mountains here.
Yeah, I'm in a group, and they were always posting up like nature pictures from hikes around Hawaii. And that's beautiful. All the flora uh-huh. and fauna, and, you know, beautiful.
Right, right.
But what type of experiences have you had recently with spirits?
Well, the most recent one was when I came in from a hike and I was getting water out of the refrigerator, and I felt that energy go through my head, and then all of the electricity went off. That was about 2 weeks ago. Another experience I had, and this lasted for about 5 years, where at night, right before I would go to sleep, I would feel someone patting my arm, like as if someone was saying, it's okay, everything's going to be okay. I would feel someone sit on the bed, and oftentimes I thought it was Stephen coming to bed, and I would swipe my hand over and nobody would be there. I've also had this wild experience where I was in meditation one night, and this new energy came in and said that it was my spiritual husband, and I was like dumbfounded by that. I had never heard of a spiritual husband, and I went and I looked it up, and I was reading about it, and it's apparently a very negative thing to get involved with. So yeah, I had to put up some energy blocks around that. And an interesting thing is, I read that shamans are known to have spiritual spouses. Who knows?
Interesting. I mean, it's like anything, isn't it? You know, you've always got to read up and do a little bit of research and learn, you know, whenever you get into the more spiritual side.
Right, definitely. Oh, I do have another experience I can share with you. My older sister, she was always open to ghosts, and she would do the Ouija board, that kind of stuff. And one day I sent her a video. I said, this video is really spiritual and it's really something that resonates with me. Why don't you check it out? And so she started watching it. It was a YouTube video and it was a spiritual lady. And I can't remember her name, but my sister was watching the video and she had two people in the same room with her. And all of a sudden, this bright light starts shining out from behind her phone and she drops her phone and her hands are thrown back like this burst of energy or a wave of wind or something knocked her arms backwards. She went into cardiac arrest and they pulled her down onto the floor and a neighbor came by who was a nurse. They were able to bring her back. And I talked to her later that day and she told me what had happened. And of course I apologized. Wow. I don't understand what happened with this. I've never heard of anything like this. This is wild. And she said, well, you know, that experience has taken away my fear of death. She said that when it happened, all she could feel was this beautiful, loving energy, and she saw this golden light just sweep over her and completely embrace her. She did not feel any pain from the heart attack. She did not feel any chest compressions when they were trying to save her. She didn't remember any of that. And the really strange thing that happened was the following day, she actually passed away. And, you know, I've always felt that there was some outside force that came into our reality that day and influenced me to send her that video because she was sick. She had heart problems. She was, I think, 53, so she wasn't too terribly old, but she wasn't in good shape. And I just feel like there was something that influenced me to send her that video because her time was up. Her time was coming up, and she knew that, and she was terrified of facing that. And this beautiful experience, the day before she dies, this beautiful experience, it changed her perspective on death, and she wasn't afraid. And so that gives me a great deal of peace to know that when she passed, she was ready for it, and she wasn't scared.
Like a time of need, because when people are getting closer to their time, you know, it can be scary.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And another thing that happened, my mom was on her deathbed, and I had I flown in to see her from Paris. We had gone to Europe for vacation, and I hadn't seen her for a few years. I just knew that she was going to be passing soon. And so I flew into Nashville, and I was there for a few days. It had a nice visit and all. And a month later, she was on her deathbed. And when I had seen her the month before, she was up and about and doing things. But I knew that her time was coming up. Somehow I knew it. And sure enough, a month later, she was on her deathbed. And I was here in Honolulu, and she was just outside of Nashville. And I could feel this fear coming from her that she was afraid to let go. She was non-responsive to people around her, but she was still aware enough that I could feel her energy and feel what she was feeling in her experience at that moment. And she was just afraid to pass over. And so I called in everyone that in my family that had passed, which has been mostly everyone in my family has passed, and called them around her. And I just did a meditation saying, it's okay. There's no need to be afraid. You're going to leave this existence and you're going to feel lighter and happier. And you just really need to cut ties with all these negative vibrations here. And within minutes, she passed away. Within minutes.
Let go.
She let go. And I really felt like she let go in peace. And that she was okay at that point. And I have felt her around me occasionally here and there, not as much as I had hoped for. She kind of catches me off guard sometimes. I was lying on my couch one night listening to my husband play guitar. And out of the blue, I feel my mother's energy come up through the couch and through my body. And I felt her standing behind the couch. And I knew it was her. I knew it was. And it was a beautiful experience. It really was.
You know, they never really go, do they? They come back and they visit and to see how we are.
They do. You know, my dad passed away in 2004, and I still occasionally feel him come around. I don't see him anymore, but I still feel his energy.
Yeah, I've said this before on a show. You know, if, you know, when my time comes, I will do exactly that. I will come back and visit. No problem.
Right. And that's what I've told everybody, you know. If you don't believe it now, you will believe it after I pass away, because I'm going to make it really obvious.
Set those fire alarms off.
Right, exactly. You know, that's the experience that I love the most to share, because it was so concrete and I had a witness, and just wow. It was just breathtaking, that experience.
You've also been dabbling in the podcast world as well. Is that correct?
I have. I am a newbie on the block, and I just launched The Experience of a Lightworker, and it's pretty much everywhere you can get your podcast. My focus is going to be on spirituality and talking about things like spirit guides, Kundalini awakening. And my next episode will be about Kundalini awakening, where I had a spontaneous golden Kundalini awakening, which was, it was also profound and beautiful. It's, you know, when I was going through that experience, it was like I had reached nirvana. So yeah, in that podcast, I want to share the things that we've talked about and, you know, maybe more detail, but also my Kundalini awakening experience. I've had experiences of energy downloads and just all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it's relatively new. I'm working on the second full episode and it'll be out soon. So yeah, if anybody's interested, you know, come on over and have a listen. And if anybody has any spiritual experiences with spirit guides, with Kundalini awakening, with your chakras. I've also had wild experiences with my heart chakra. If I meet someone that's really spiritual, my heart chakra will just spin super, super fast, and it feels like it's heating up and it's going to leave a burn mark on my skin. I've had that happen a few times. So yeah, it's a fun place to share those kinds of experiences. And I'm also going to share with people how to cut ties with negativity and traumas and heartbreaks, so you can release that negative vibration and have more room for positivity and love and light to come in. So yeah, that's what that podcast is all about. I don't know how successful it will be. I'm putting my heart into it. I know it's a ton of work from everything you've told me, Nick. I don't know if I have it in me to do that level of work, but if I get enough people involved that want to share their own experiences, I can see doing this for a while.
If someone wants to contact you, do you have an email address?
Yeah, it's my name, Andrea, A-N-D-R-E-A dot light, L-I-G-H-T, at icloud.com.
Wonderful. And for those out there which aren't too quick on getting pens and paper, I'll put all the details down below in the show notes.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much.
That was nice and easy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a lot less stressful than I thought it was going to be.
Everybody says that.
And you know, the crazy thing is, I was an investigator and I used to put people under great deals of pressure when I was interrogating them. But when the tables turned, it's quite different.
It's different. Andrea, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing that for our listeners.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I feel very privileged to be on your show.
You are more than welcome. You enjoy the rest of your day and those beautiful birds singing.
Yeah, you too. Okay, thank you so much.
No problem. Take care of yourself.
You too.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Brian and Andrea for sharing tonight, and as always, thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.